Hi, I'm Alicia Michelle, and as a trained and certified Christian mindset coach, I've helped hundreds of Christian women discover brain science-based mindset tools to help them grow closer to God and break free from anxiety, perfectionism, people-pleasing, and feeling like they're never enough. The Christian Mindset Coach is the award-winning podcast that shows you how to use simple brain science principles and biblical truth to renew your mind for lasting confidence, joy, and peace. I'm so glad you're here. Grab a cozy spot and let's get started. Hi there, and welcome to today's episode of the Christian Mindset Coach. I am your host, Alicia Michelle. I shared recently on the podcast about this phenomenon that I see happening with women all the time, and I definitely have felt this. It's this idea of, I see a lot of women, really smart, really capable women, just standing on the edge of the pool. Do you know what I'm saying by that? They're standing at the edge of the pool. It's really, really hot outside, but they're afraid to jump in the water and experience what could be in the water just because they are so used to and comfortable with sitting on the side of the pool. The thing is when they leap off and jump into the water, they don't really know what's waiting for them there. And that is what keeps them stuck on the side of the pool. And this is that fear. This is the fear that we all face. And God gives all of us every day different opportunities to move beyond where we are right now into something bigger, to a bigger space. He gives us that opportunity, but so many of us stay stuck. And that's why I wanted to invite on the podcast today someone who actually is one of my business coaches, and that is Jennifer Allwood. Jennifer wrote a book called Fear is Not the Boss of You. She wrote that a couple years ago. And I just love Jennifer and her no-nonsense style of talking about things, about fear, about making big decisions, about not being afraid to just push through and listen to God. And I wanted her to share her take on this concept of fear for you guys, especially since so many of us in this world where there is a lot to fear. I mean, let's just be real. We do have very good reasons for our fears, but what do we do with them? Does God want us to stay in there? Does he want us to stay on the side of the pool? You and I both know he doesn't. So how do we move from being those women on the side of the pool to being women who say, yes, I'm jumping for you, Jesus. I'm jumping in the pool and doing what you want me to do. How do we move through fear? How do we approach it from a loving perspective? And how do we use fear even as an opportunity to grow in our relationship with Christ? What does that look like? So Jennifer is a multi seven-figure year business coach who has coached over 20,000 clients on mindset and business strategies. And her podcast, The Jennifer Allwood Show, has nearly 7 million downloads. And she has a best-selling book called Fear is Not the Boss of You. Jen and her husband, Jason, of 26 years, they live mostly in Kansas City with their two daughters, and they get to Arizona to see their two grown sons whenever they can. So without further ado, let's get into this conversation today with Jennifer Allwood. Well, hey, Jen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited. I love doing podcast interviews.
Yeah, they're really fun. Okay, so you wrote this great book on managing fear, and I would love to start this conversation first by asking you what your journey has been like to work through fear, through all the different things you've experienced throughout your life versus running from it. I know that's a big message of your book. So can you share a little bit about that to start us off?
Yeah. Well, and thank you again for having me. So I think that I spent a lot of my early, let's say 20s, and you know, in my 20s, probably worrying way too much about what other people thought of me. So, you know, having a fear of man. And then I think I spent a lot of my 30s being scared of, you know, making decisions, making bad decisions. You know, we were baby making during the 30s and having kiddos at three during that decade. And, you know, worrying about, there's a never ending stream of things to worry about, right? And so what I was finding is there was times when it would feel like I was just stuck and not doing things or just not able to like make progress or not growing even as an individual because I was worried about things and fearful. And I think that I possibly just the way that I was raised has always, you know, fears kind of always been there of different types, But then I don't think that that's special just to me. I think we all have things that we fear, whether it's fear of failure, fear of success, fear of what people think of us, fear that people aren't thinking of us. Fear that, you know, what are they going to think if I make money? As you know, I'm a business coach. And so I deal with women all the time who are making money. But what if I don't make any money? What if I make money and then I have a fear that I'm going to lose it all? Like, there's a never-ending stream of possibilities of things that thoughts, especially feelings, that we can, if we think about them for too long and we sit and we meditate on those, that they're going to lead us in a completely different direction than what the majority of us want our life to go in. And so that was kind of the premise of the book. It's not that I was ever someone who, you know, was crippled with fear and anxiety or anything like that. It was more of just it was kind of running in the background all the time. And how do I knew that like a lot of the things that I wanted were on the other side of making decisions that I was scared to make. So how do I force myself to not let my feelings be the boss of me? You know, so that's why the book is called Fear is Not the Boss of You. How do I still make decisions and not let fear like control and dictate, you know, what those decisions are? So that's where the book kind of came from.
So moving through fear versus just running from it, that was something you had to learn.
Yeah. Well, I do think that there has been, you know, sometimes God gives us grace in different areas. And I think I've been graced in this area, which, you know, also makes me be able to write a book. Because I've really been able to figure out ways for myself to do things that I don't want to do and that I'm scared to do. I think some of that is God's grace. But the other part is just how I've trained my mind to think, which is, you know, hopefully in alignment with the Bible, which, you know, is very important to me. But I think there's a lot of like great sayings out there, Alicia, like, you know, punch fear in the face. Okay, well, what does that mean, actually? I can't stand that. You know, the Nike slogan of no fear. Okay, bullcrap. I mean,
yeah, right?
It makes millions of dollars, but it's legitimately like not even the truth. And so how do we as women, as adults, not be controlled about her from our past, right. Not be afraid of repeating patterns? How do we make decisions when we're worried about how those decisions are going to impact others? How do we make decisions even when we're not sure of what the outcome is going to be? Because the majority of the time when people are scared to make decisions, it's because we've either A, we've made poor decisions in the past and we don't want to repeat it, or B, we just wish that we had a guarantee. Like, I would move to Chicago if I just knew that that's what I was supposed to do.
Right.
I'd quit my day job and start a business if I just knew that that's what I was supposed to do. And the truth is, especially as Christian women, I think so often we're waiting for this like megaphone from heaven and we're hoping to get 27 signs. You know, on billboards and on songs and from friends that are calling and a complete stranger on the subway, you know, and we're wanting them all to like validate the thing that we're thinking about or the question we're pondering or the decision that has to be made. And we're hopeful then based on those 87 occurrences that then we'll make the right decision and everything's going to turn out okay. And that just rarely does not happen.
Right.
And so how do you make decisions even when you're unsure of what the outcome's going to be and make them not with confidence that it's going to work out okay, but confidence that you, very few things on this side of heaven are going to kill us. And your decisions about whether or not to quit a day job or whether or not to move or whether or not to, you know, start an adoption process or whatever, those things are probably not what's going to affect us.
So it seems like what you're talking about then is this idea that we are desperate for clarity. We're desperate for an answer from heaven in order to help us move forward. And that is just not always going to be there. In fact, most of the time it isn't going to be there.
I think it's not only clarity, but we want a guarantee.
Right.
We would like to have some, you know, and it, like even because I'll talk to different women and they're like, even if I just felt like it was an 80% chance of this being the right decision. So I think that so often, so let me take this back even a step further, Alicia. So I have decided at my young age of 52 that we're kind of set up from childhood to not really trust ourselves, our gut feeling, you know, inklings that we may have from heaven, et cetera. Let me give you some examples. Like from, you know, early childhood, I was raised, you know, in a very strict household where, you know, you ask, may I be excused from the table? And no, you've got to eat your dinner, but I'm not hungry. Yes, you are. You need to eat. So like we're taught almost as children, like you can't trust your own body. You don't know when you're hungry, Jen. You sit there and eat. Does that make sense?
For sure.
And it's like elementary school, which, by the way, if you're doing that as a parent, stop doing that. Your kids know when they're hungry. They will not starve to death. But that's why we have a generation. That's one of many reasons why we have a generation that's obese, because we were told we had to finish our meals. And so then you get to be an adult. Then you can't let things go to waste. It's funny how that happens. Then we go to, you know, public school, and nothing against public school, because all of my kids have gone to public school, but you have to raise your hand to go to the bathroom. You have to ask permission for everything. So we're almost groomed to not trust ourselves. Like our bodies, our thoughts, no, I'm not hungry, you know. Yes, you are. Do you need to go to the bathroom before we leave? No, yes, you do. No, I don't. When you're free, maybe I do. I don't know. Maybe I do need to go to the bathroom. And then, you know, to ask permission for everything. And so then you grow up to be an adult and you have decisions that need made. And it's no wonder that we're like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. And so I'll ask women, well, what do you think? Well, what I'm trying to think, but I'm not sure. And it's like this complete uncertainty.
Yeah,
because we've been trained to not trust ourselves, to not go with our gut, to not go with what we think God is instructing us to do. So then, you know, we're wanting some sort of a guarantee. We're wanting some sort of clarity, but that rarely happens first. What always happens first is there has to be motion from me, motion from you. There has to be a decision that's made. You have to start going in one direction. And then clarity either comes eventually with more steps, or we have to believe that we serve a big enough God that he can like change our trajectory if we're going down the wrong way. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. No, that's so insightful, though, to make that connection between we are told what to do for so long. I have four kids and I have one who's 19 and he recently said something kind of profound. He's like, you know, Mom, I'm just trying to figure things out because, you know, most of my life, like you guys said, do this and do that. And now I have to kind of make my own decisions and figure things out. And I was like, I mean, in those moments, I'm kind of like, yeah, well, you wanted us to help you make those decisions. And that's our job as parents is to guide them. I know that's not what you're saying. But at the same time, like there does come a point where we have to step forward. And if we have been told somehow or we somehow believe that there's going to be full direction and full clarity and fear is going to be gone before we move, then we are going to stay stuck in that. We're not going to go anywhere.
So the problem is that, especially in this country, we pay way too much attention to our feelings. Might just say that.
Yeah.
We are a country controlled by our feelings. And because it's not the same in some other countries where they don't have the luxury of worrying about how they feel. They need to go get clean water for their children. Do you know what I'm saying? And so, but, you know, we have different luxuries. And so, you know, if we get done with this podcast today, I will inevitably think to myself, Alicia, you know what? I just did a good job. I just came out of a training class where I just taught another woman's business group and taught on software. And that was all fun. And then I've come here. So I've had 2 hours of reporting by the time we get done with this. So I'll think to myself, you know what? I feel like eating, you know, a handful of Hershey's Kisses or a handful of M&Ms. And so I will go to the pantry and reward myself because I'm feeling like I did a good job and you should get a treat. And so like our feelings are liars so often. And it's rare that I feel like doing the things that I actually need to do in order to be a better person, be a better mom, being a better one. You know, I don't always feel like going and apologizing when I have, you know, not been but showed up as the best wife possible. But so if I listen to my feelings, I won't do it. But the truth is that I need to do it. You know what I'm saying? And so like, if we pay too much attention to our feelings, they will always steer us in a wrong direction. This is one of the reasons why I got my life coaching certification as a business coach, because I teach strategy all day, every day. However, I could tell that even with good strategy, so many women will do nothing with it. And I was like, okay, what's happening? I mean, at this point, I've coached over 20,000 women on how to grow a business. So why can I feel like I put out good strategy, but like 5% of the group will actually do the thing? And it always comes back to so many of the women are stuck, and usually they're stuck based on fear. And so I got my life coaching certification 2 years ago because I wanted to understand better how to coach women in business. Like, why aren't they taking action? What is preventing them from doing XYZ? And so often it starts with our thought life and what we think making the wrong decision equals.
Yeah.
And so, and two, I have found a real pattern between women who are stuck, women who, which means they're not making any decisions at all, even though they know they need to. And the correlation between that and women who've gone through significant hard things, trauma
right.
in their life. Because women that have been through really hard things, like we will often grasp for the familiar, even if the familiar is not good for us.
Yes.
Because at least I know what to expect here. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
This is why you can look at, you know, your sister-in-law and not my sister-in-law, not yours, but just giving this as an example. And you can wonder, why does she keep dating that same guy or getting in that same relationship or keep making that same mistake over and over? And we can look at her and go, stop. Like, what are you doing? But for her, it's become a familiar pattern. It's become something that brings comfort, even if it's bad, because it's at least we know what to expect.
Right.
And I think what is fascinating is how uncomfortable we are with the unexpected, how uncomfortable we are with the unknown. This is one of the reasons why so many people are terrified, you know, of death too, because it's like the unknown and we don't know. And so If we let our feelings dictate our choices, if you've been through a whole lot of yucky stuff on the side of it, but a lot of times women especially, they will continue to go in the same patterns because at least they are familiar with that pattern versus stepping out into something different, trying something different. They're terrified. They think they shouldn't be terrified. They think they should be confident. Yeah. Can I say one more really like controversial thing? I know you're going to say yes. Thank you. I had one chapter of my book, Fear's Not the Boss of You, called Confidence is a Crock of Crap. And they really wanted me to like change that because, you know, I've got a Christian publisher and I'm a good girl who loves Jesus. And sometimes I just think there's nothing other than the word crap that's appropriate. And, you know, I mean, sometimes stuff just doesn't have the same punch.
No.
But the world is really trying to sell us the idea that confidence is what you're looking for. As soon as you get confident, like, that's what you need in order to get the guy, get the job, make the move, do the thing, start the business, build the... And so women are thinking, well, what's wrong with me? I don't feel confident. I feel like an imposter. I feel like I have no idea what the heck I'm doing. I'm terrified. Something must be wrong with me because I'm not confident. And there, you know, that's a bajillion-dollar industry of people selling courses and books and magazines on how to be more confident. And the truth is it's really backwards because what women actually need is to be courageous. You need to have the courage to do something you've never done before, to make a decision that you don't know the outcome of. You need to step out and just be like, you know what? I'm at least making a move and we'll see what happens and I can adjust accordingly. Mm. And if you do that, then sometimes the confidence ends up coming. Not always, but sometimes it will. If you want me to tell you a story about that, I can.
Yeah.
You sure?
Sure.
But
sure, sure.
Again, well, I'll tell your listeners a story. So when I was 39, I went with a friend of mine. And I talked about this in Fear is Not the Boss of You. And we watched a triathlon and it was amazing. It was actually on my birthday weekend here in Kansas City where my husband and I live with our kids. And we were watching a friend of hers compete in this triathlon. It was amazing. And there was girls aging like 16 to like 70 something. But I remember watching this like 70 some year old woman, let's just say 72. And she, you know, when you do a triathlon, you swim, you go with the order of like danger in terms of what could kill you. So you swim first and then you bike and then you run. Everything gets safer as you go. Mm. So she's going to swim and it's in a lake. And she gets in the lake and she's in like goggles and she swims really, really slow. She's like one of the last people to get out of the lake. And the crowd's going crazy, Alicia. And it was amazing. And I'm crying, you know, and we're all watching this woman crying and she's going to get on a bike at 70 some years old. And I'm looking at my 39 year old self thinking, girl, you need to do something with your life. Like that woman could do it at 72. Like, what are you doing? And so I think to myself, well, you know what? I'm going to do this triathlon next year. I will be 40 this weekend next this triathlon. And then I remember, oh, yeah, but I don't know how to swim. And I'm like, great. How do you do a triathlon in a lake? How do you swim 500 meters in a lake when you don't know how to swim? I mean, when I'm talking, not know how to swim, I'm talking getting into the shower. And if water hits my face, like I choke type of not knowing how to swim. I've never blown the bubble, never put my head underwater on purpose in my lifetime. Okay?
Wow.
And I was 35 years old. And so neither of my parents knew how to swim. I was not raised by water in any way. And so at 39, I hired a swim coach. And I had two different swim coaches over the course of the next year who worked with me to learn how to put my head underwater. I'll never forget like holding hands with one of the swim coaches. And she's like, okay, we're just going to dunk and you're going to blow out in our swimming pool and in our neighborhood. And I'm like weeping, Alicia. I mean, I know it sounds ridiculous, but if you've never put your head underwater,
No, that's frightening. Yeah.
And all I can think of is I've got to be able to show my kids, you know, mom doing things she's scared of, learning how to overcome it, because who else is going to teach our kids that? I mean, I can expect school to teach them biology and algebra, but I can't expect them to be top courage at school. I can't expect church to teach that either. I mean, that's our job as parents. So I am determined I'm going to learn how to swim so that they know how to swim, so that they see me do hard things, and so that I don't die on this triathlon. And, you know, over the course of the year, I get to where I am an average, if even that, swimmer. And the Today Show, like from NBC, they sent out like a camera crew. They found a blog post of mine where I was talking about learning how to swim for my 40th birthday and doing a triathlon. And they were going to do a show on how women had changed the way they were celebrating 40. And so they were going to feature my story. So I was literally on spandex on national television. I grabbed seven of my girlfriends and I'm like, number one, you're doing the triathlon with me. And number two, you're also wearing spandex on national television with me because it's not doing that by myself. So we were on TV. It gets to where it's race day. It's my birthday weekend. And, you know, I have to run and jump and get in the water and swim 500 meters. And I had a panic attack. Mm-hmm. And so I have to swim over to, you know, a boy that's probably 22, 24 years old. Mia, are you okay? And I'm thinking to myself, dude, Do I look stinking okay right now? I am choking on this lake. I just drank half of it. No, I'm not okay. Do you need me to get you out, ma'am? And I'm like, for the love, you will not get me out. I am finishing this stupid race, you know, and I'm bad. But I finished the swim and I did the bike and I did the run. I ended up doing a couple more triathlons that summer. I ended up doing 10 triathlons in 6 years.
Oh my gosh.
In my early 40s. So in every triathlon, I had a panic attack in the water. Every single one.
Oh.
And the reason that I talk about that in the book is because sometimes, like, you hope that you do something enough that the fear goes away and you get better at it. And in a perfect world, that'd be great. But I just don't know that that always happens. And I can remember thinking, Lord, why did you want me to do a triathlon? And then years later, when I was writing the book, I'm like, oh, so that I could share with other women my story. You know what? Like, I knew God wanted me to do something. I was scared. I didn't know how to do it. I figured out how to do it. I tried it. I was really lousy at it. And I kept trying to do it again and again and again, like 10 times, thinking, surely I'll get better at this. And I never did get better at this. But the point is showing up and doing the thing. The point is doing it even when you're scared. Because the truth is our life is never always about us.
Are you facing a big life transition, like an empty nest? Or is there some sort of dream or desire in your heart for things to be different? Like you want to start a business, pursue a hobby, or get serious about doing those self-care habits and boundaries? You not only need a plan for change, but you need loving, Christ-centered support to work through the fear and the overwhelm that keep these dreams from becoming a reality. If that's you, then you are the perfect candidate for my Onward and Upward Group Coaching Collective. Imagine if you could have 6 months of one-on-one coaching support and caring community to help you confidently create a step-by-step action plan to meet your goals, to get ongoing accountability and encouragement, to overcome those obstacles along the way, and to grow spiritually. Week after week, you'll work one-on-one with me in coaching, Bible study, teaching times, in this powerful small group setting that gets results. Apply now at vibrantchristianliving.com/coaching. Space is extremely limited and we're just about to open the next group. So if you're interested, don't wait. vibrantchristianliving.com/coaching to apply.
You know, I had 7 other women that did that triathlon with me, and those 7 women grabbed women who then did triathlons with them. And it had so little to do with the triathlon and more just that doing something outside of my comfort zone, showing myself you can do things and it'd be hard, but you won't die. And that then like carried over, Alicia, into my business. And when my business blew up 6 years ago in the online space, it was like same feelings, different venue. You know what I mean? I'm like, you know, hyperventilating as I see all these women signing up for my coaching group. I added 1,100 people in a 10-day span.
Wow.
Group. Forbes magazine, if you Google it, you can still find the article on Forbes that they did a couple of years ago. And so my company went from $500,000 a year to $2 million a year in a 10-day period 6 years ago. I didn't have the infrastructure for that. I didn't have the team for that. I didn't have like, and so it was the same like, oh my gosh, I don't know what I'm doing. Panicking feelings that I used to have during triathlons, but I had trained myself. Okay, I'm scared. I don't know what I'm doing, but this is like a muscle that can be trained. And we realize we can do hard things. We can do scary things and it not kill us. So if nobody died, I'm not going to die. And we can figure this out. Like, and so I think that's, you know, one of the main things I hoped women would take away from my book is you are capable of doing hard things and you may be scared, but that doesn't mean that you're not supposed to do them. That just means you're going to have to figure out how to force yourself to do it anyway.
Yeah, that's so powerful. I can totally relate to that because there have been several times in my life where I've been going through something really, really hard. And I felt God saying, I want to you to challenge yourself to do something hard physically. And for me, that's running. Like, I am not a runner. I do not like running. But it was like, no, you're going to run 3 miles every morning. And it's like, oh.
Yeah.
But that taught me in those moments every morning, I can get through this.
Perseverance.
Difficult. I can push through it. I lived, like you said, I didn't die.
Yeah.
In the same way, I'm going to get through this other thing. So it's okay.
No idea how many of your neighbors were watching you run every single morning and feeling like, you know, a positive conviction of
laughing at me. No, just kidding.
I'm tired. And get out there and run too. Like people are always watching, you know, our live. I did a podcast episode recently called The Ripple Effect on my podcast, which is just about how sometimes we get so focused on ourselves that we forget. We're watching our life. They're And sometimes other women in particular, they need to see you like fight your own dragons, fight your own demons, and watch how you like navigate that so that they, you know, have better tools to navigate their own stuff.
For sure.
Because the Bible's very clear, like it rains on the just and the unjust. So we've all got stuff that we go through. And people are always watching us go through things, whether it's building a business or starting a triathlon or jogging 3 miles every morning. I mean, there are people that notice and take note. And so understanding that when God has something he wants for me to do or you to do, then our answer just needs to be yes. And not all the caveats of why we're not good at it and why we don't want to and how I'm going to possibly drown. And, you know, but I don't like the water. Like all of the excuses that we give, but we still just have no idea how being obedient to what God's asking us to do, how that can change the lives of other people just besides us because they're watching.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I want to just, because you've covered so many different topics that you have addressed in your book so beautifully here, just kind of in our natural conversation. So I want to close just with this quote that you had in the book. It said, "You cannot ask God to show you what he wants you to do if you've been ignoring what he's been whispering in your ear for years." So how do you see women just asking for God for direction, for wisdom, but at the same time, they're also like, you know, about those things that he's been saying? How do we do this as women? And why do you think we do this as women?
Well, I think that, you know, we're supposed to be in relationship with God and with Jesus. And so relationships are, they're both people are in it, right? It's a two-sided thing. So I related in the Bible to like, or in the Bible, goodness, in my book, not the Bible, but in my book. So like if my husband came into the bathroom every morning and he's like, "Jen, I need you to do this. I'm going to ask you to do this. Like, can you start the laundry and make the dinner and go get the kids?" And like, and gave me his laundry list of requests.
Yeah.
And then just like turned around and walked out of the room and was like, "Thanks." And turned around and walked out of the room. Yeah. I'm like, "What the heck, man? Like, I need for you to, you know, do this. And can you grab this?" And, you know, we've got 4 kids. So we've got rotating crap. And, you know, and so it's supposed to be like a conversation. That's relationship.
Right.
And so if every morning I wake up and I'm asking the Lord to bless my family, protect my kids and bring more impact and bring more clients and bless my business and bless my babies and all these things that I'm like, "Thank you, Jesus. Amen." And then I go about my day. Like, I just sometimes wonder, and this is not, you know, this is not in the Bible, but I sometimes wonder, is God there going, whoa, Jen, take time. Like, don't run off. Like, I've had some things I wanted to ask you. You know, I just wonder, what that looks like, because that's what relationship is that not only am I supposed to take time to pray, but I'm also supposed to take time to listen. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's not enough conversation and or training and or people talking about the listening part. Like, that's how we hear from heaven. Right. Because I'm so guilty of this too, Alicia, because I get busy and life is crowded. And I mean, you know, some of, you know, our life, we've got 4 children, we've got 2 dogs, we have the house we live in and 2 short-term rentals, and we've got my husband's business and my business, and we have a real estate business. So it's just, there's noise here in the house. And then I pick up my phone and Instagram and Facebook, and it's all dinging. And, you know, there's always something like trying to get our attention.
Right.
And plus, at 52, I've really realized, I do not think that I need to go to a doctor for an ADHD diagnosis. But there are certainly hints that, you know, now that I have a child with one, I'm like, So I do not have an official diagnosis, but I can tell that I have many qualities of somebody who does have ADHD. So when I look at all that, like, my brain is never silent, as probably yours is not either. And most women who are listening to this podcast.
Yep.
So in order for me to like stop, collaborate and listen, I just sat in a little brilliant.
This is about to be a new edition. I got you right there, girl.
Thank you. We're right here, just like that. But it takes everything in me, Alicia, to like sit and be quiet. It is the hardest thing on the planet, because I can't even like sit and watch a movie without also checking my Facebook notification and filing my nails and folding.
Like, you know, all these ideas in your head, you're writing down all the time. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I think that especially if you have children, like you learn when you've got a newborn. Okay, I'm going to have to learn how to multitask really stinking quickly, because, you know, just to nurse a baby is great. But if I can nurse a baby with one hand and then feed my toddler with the other one, I learned really quickly. I'm getting both of them fed at one time.
Exactly.
You know, then you're like, you know, you're going to like need to be impaired or run a business. And that's when multitasking is like no longer good. It's not healthy. It's not going to have fruit. Because when I pray, like, I also need to just sit and be like, okay, Lord, now what do you want to say? What do you think about this? What do you think about this decision that I need to make? Right. And I swear to you, that's what I think. Oh, yeah. You know what? I need to get laundry pods. Oh, I forgot to send that email to Ari's teacher. Like, every time I try to be silent, then I hear, you know, a notification from, you know, any TikTok channel. That it's like, it requires, I think, so much self-control and discipline in 2024 to just find quiet and to force your brain to just shut off and allow the Lord to speak to you. And so this is one of the reasons why I think so often the Lord will speak to me in a dream. And a lot of women I coach, I'm always praying that the Lord would give them dreams, in particular about their business and their family and their future in the nighttime hours, because I think sometimes it's like the only time your brain shuts off. The only time God can maybe kind of get something in there, read that going 500 miles a minute. And so I'm always encouraging women, like, don't foo-foo that stuff off. Pay close attention to the things that you're dreaming about and the ideas that you're getting, especially if you're like, where did that come from? Because you just never know how God's maybe trying to speak to you in this really loud world.
Yeah. And in that silence, that's where we hear the quiet voice of God comforting us to that it's okay to take that courageous step towards fear, that it's going to be all right. Like you said, we're not going to die, that there is a purpose for this, and that there is significance behind the action that we need to take. There's eternal significance. Yes. So yeah, it's I totally agree with you. I've been working more in my life and in just encouraging listeners and clients too, like making space for I still have regular Bible time in my morning and things like that, but also just taking times in my day where I don't have anything or anyone like planned for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. I just sit outside with God. And it's just like, when those little thoughts come in, I just try to shut them off and just listen, and have my journal there to kind of write down a few things, but just listen to what he has to say, because you're right. If we are not disciplined to stop all of that, we wonder, how are we supposed to move through these things? How are we supposed to move through these things without God? And if he's not speaking to us, then how, I mean, he's speaking, but are we listening? You know, that's the real issue.
I'm feeling like incredible conviction just sitting here, you know, recording this episode with you, because I think we get through seasons where things, where life just gets busy. And, you know, I am guilty of, I love a good list. I don't know why, but I so it's a, you know, 1989 day planner every single day. Like, I don't like
I love my day planner. It's awesome.
Love my day planner.
It makes me happy.
So much like joy that comes from crossing things off, and you feel productive and like you did some things. And so sometimes I get up in the morning and I just want to hit the ground running, because I know my to-do list is a mile long, and I'm like, let's bust through this. And, you know, I'm excited to like get things done. And before I know it, I'm like, wait, I haven't had my quiet time. I haven't prayed. And then I have to remind myself, like, we serve a God of order. We serve an orderly God, right? And so like order matters. And so sometimes I'm like, Jen, you're praying the most at night. Had you spent that time earlier in the day, that should have prevented you from going off the rails at lunchtime, or, you know, that chaos.
Exactly.
Who knows? You know, it's not like a formula. We don't serve a genie in the bottle. But if I would do things in order and give God the first fruits of my day, which is the quiet time and the prayer time and the listening time, like, I just wonder how much chaos that I have avoided during my normal work day. And so I'm sitting here right now going, geez, Jen, you got it. You can't just sit here and talk about it. You get it. Because like I go through seasons, right? Do you do that too?
Absolutely.
And you get the seasons where you just swap.
Absolutely.
Right,
like,
now,
just things change in the schedule, or like your kids, just all kinds of stuff change. And you're like, you have to rediscipline yourself to fit it back in and to make it happen. And yeah, for sure.
100%.
Well, this is such a great conversation. I love all the things that you've covered. All of it is in your new book. So tell us where we can find the book, how women can hear more about the great things that you do, all the good things.
Thank you. Well, Fear's Not the Boss of You came out at the beginning of the pandemic. It was quite a fiasco because we had a 12-city book tour planned, and I was super excited. It was, you know, there was high hopes for the book, and the book came out April 7th, but the world shut down like March 21st, which is my husband's birthday. I'll never forget. We had, you know, all the plans for that night, and that's when Kansas City in particular completely shut down. And so we had a big conference with 400 women coming to Kansas City, and we had to quickly shift and make that into an online event, and all of the book tour was canceled, and every bookstore in America was closed, you know, for a good 6 weeks. But the book still, you know, it still did well. So it went to the Amazon number one 3 different times within like the first 3 months. So you can, of course, find it on Amazon. It's called Fear's Not the Boss of You. It does have a follow-up book, How to Get Stuck and Stay Unstuck. And it's more of like an interactive like table book that goes with book number one. So you can go find that on Amazon. If you want to just read the first chapter before you buy it, you can go to jenniferallwood.com/chapter1, and I'll just email you chapter one if you're not the boss of you before you buy the whole thing. So
Yeah, thank you for letting me give that a plug. It's,
of course, you know,
things that I remember when I was writing the book and my business coach at the time, because I have a business coach and I have business coaches because I believe in being coached.
Right.
She said, Jennifer, I want you when the book comes out to be way more concerned about the depth than the breadth of your sales. And I'm like, what? And she's like, everybody hopes to hit New York Times bestsellers list, which we did not. I've learned a lot about that list, by the way, in the last couple of years and how things do hit that list.
Yeah.
It's not all on the up and up. And then I'm not saying that, I mean, there's genuinely some great books on there that, you know, got there like they should. But she said, what I want you to be more concerned about is, does it change lives versus how many do you sell? Do people pick it up and does it change their life? And I can tell you that when I've gotten emails from people who have read the book and it changed their life, or they gave their life to Christ for the first time, or, you know, that like matters and that counts. And so, you know, the book, it's been out, you know, for a couple of years at this point. It's still like, it's got like a long tail on it. It's still like doing its thing. And that just brings me so much joy. So
that's
thank
amazing.
You for letting me mention that.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I do have the book and it was very encouraging to go through it and read it. So yes, ladies, check it out. Thanks again, Jen, so much for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me here. Thank you.
One of the things that I took from that conversation was first that Jennifer is not afraid to say what needs to be said. And I love that about her. I love that she's like, listen, you need to hear this. And this is what needs to happen in your life. So I love that that is her attitude towards all these things, especially this topic of fear, because we do need a kick in the pants sometimes to move through fear. Let's be honest. But she wrote a quote that was from James Clear. And she wrote this in the book. It says, how long will you put off what you are capable of doing to continue what you are comfortable doing? Oh, when I read that, I thought, oh my gosh, how long will I put off what I'm capable of doing to continue what I am comfortable doing? Comfort really is that thing that keeps us stuck in fear. It may be dysfunctional where we're at. It may be hot, to use that metaphor that we used about being on the side of the pool. The weather may be hot and we may not like where we're at, but it sure darn is more comfortable than jumping in and feeling and experiencing the unknown on the other side of it. But what is at stake here? And we kind of referenced that in that conversation, but we are capable through the power of the Holy Spirit to do so much more than we can hope or imagine. So much more. And we are the ones, we are the bottlenecks who keep ourselves from moving to that next space. So I just want to say to you today, friend, not from a place of condemnation or shame, but are you facing some big things in your life where you know that God is trying to push you off the side of the edge of the pool there, proverbially, and he's trying to get you to experience a new level of something else, whether it's something that you are uncomfortable with, or it's something that he wants you to step out and try that's hard, like Jen was talking about doing the triathlons. What is that thing? And if you're not quite sure what that is, the other thing to consider is what we were also talking about needing to have those spaces of silence. Because sometimes, in fact, I would say a majority of us feel like we know God, we go to church, we're even in Bible studies, but we're like, I'm not sure if I hear God's voice, or I'm not sure if I know how he's prompting me in this next season or what he wants me to even do. So that can be kind of a good thing, I guess, if you look at it from the stance of, well, I'm not necessarily being challenged, or I don't have to deal with fear because I don't necessarily hear God calling me to the next thing. But of course, God wants us to be connected with him. He wants us to be able to hear his voice. And so while that's a whole nother topic of hearing God's voice, I bring that up just to say that if you are not necessarily feeling that calling from God to move forward, can I challenge you to at least ask God, are there areas where I am letting my own fears get in the way of what you have for me next? Are there things in my life that I have allowed to build up that are keeping me in that distraction mode, or keeping me in that place of being able to just step into it and say, I'm going to do this? And usually that's fear. So that's my challenge to you after this episode, is to say, what could be under there? What could be the fears that's keeping me from doing this? And understand that our God is not a God who's going to point his finger at us and tell us that we're wrong for having those fears. He is a God who's going to say, I understand why that fear is there. I so can relate to the idea of being afraid and being scared. This is the same Jesus who sat in the Garden of Gethsemane and cried, and literally cried so hard there were drops of blood coming off of his forehead, sweating so hard, just so much tension in his body, and fear and anxiety just racing through his body. This is the God that we come to when we are afraid, when we don't know what to do next. He understands it. He understands it. So bring it to him. Let him help you dissect it and figure out what to do next. And this is that kick of the pants that she gives us. Don't wait for the confidence to move forward, that it's exactly going to be the path, that you know exactly what's going to happen. Listen for the direction and ask for courage to move forward, and let him build in that confidence the more and more and more you step. All right, friend, I would love to have this conversation further with you on Instagram or even on YouTube. If you're watching this on YouTube, would love to be able to hear your thoughts on this. What are some things that you feel like keep you stuck in fear? Why is it so hard for us in this culture right now to move forward when we feel God is just trying to push us a little bit out of our comfort zone? So I would love to hear from you. You can find me on Instagram at Alicia Michelle Coach, or you can find it on YouTube, the Christian Mindset Coach Podcast. All right, friend, have a great week. I look forward to seeing you back here next week. Bye-bye. Thanks for joining me today for the Christian Mindset Coach. If you love today's show, you've got to check out my free mindset workshop. In this free training, I share about the secret weapon for rewiring our brain to align with God's truth, the proven brain science tool that pro athletes and high achievers have used for decades. I've personally helped hundreds of Christian women use this tool to find healing from a lifetime of worry, shame, and striving. And I'd love to help you use this tool in your life as well. Sign up now for this free training at vibrantchristianliving.com/mind. I'll see you back here next week.